increase. The family relations will be cut. The minors will no more respect the elder ones. The parents will curse their children very often. These all will lead to the weakness of the family. In such a situation, if the family relations and bonds become weak and feeble, then the members of the family will be separated and will fall into the trap of Satan. This is exactly what happened to the family foundation and family bonds in the Western world. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Around the world with reporters.
Shock has rippled through the Muslim community after the European Union's highest court ruled that businesses can sack Muslim women for wearing the hijab if they work face to face with customers or if the wearing of the religious clothing causes workspace conflicts. The ruling was in response to a case brought by two German Muslim female workers who were asked by their employers not to wear Islamic headscarves while at work.
The decision has been met by claims that it will further fuel Islamophobia at this crucial time when countries in Europe such as France and Austria are already eliminating freedoms for Muslims, supposedly to combat extremism.
In Britain, several religious MPs, including Muslims and a Sikh, chastised the court, labelling the ruling as Islamophobic and deeply flawed. In addition, I spoke with a London-based female Muslim media personality about her fears for the future of Muslims in Europe.
To me, I feel oppressed, to be honest, by this decision. And I feel that I am now limited in my identity and my freedom of rights, freedom of belief, all the values that are actually supposedly meant to be Western, modern. Yes, part of it is a symbol of my faith, but it's so much more if you were to really understand what the hijab actually means, or any sort of religious symbol. It is not just coming from one aspect. I think it's really unfair. And it's, again, it is targeting a particular group, especially the Muslim women, because we are the ones that are known to be wearing the headscarf known as the hijab.
Many activists warned that following the niqab ban, European powers would target the hijab next. They were right. But if the battle to protect the hijab is lost, what comes next? Robert Carter, London.
Since the beginning of the Saudi-led war on Yemen, thousands of civilians have lost their limbs, eyes, or got mentally disabled due to the lethal bombardment on civilian facilities. According to the Amnesty International, 4 million people with disabilities in Yemen face multiple challenges, and the number is growing up each year as the war continues.
We feel like there's deliberate negligence by the international organizations towards us, as they have not provided anything so far. This comes as the number of disabled exceeds 4 million, according to the UN organizations. We call on the international organizations to come and see our sufferings. Most of us don't even have a wheelchair.
Yemen's Disabled Care Fund says it provides healthcare services for more than 200,000 disabled, including 50,000 children who are getting educational services as well. However, the fund is suffering from a shortage of money amid the continued absence of related international organizations.
The Disabled Care Fund suffers from many difficulties, including lack of resources. Meanwhile, there is a significant increase in the number of the disabled each year. Sometimes we cannot provide wheelchairs and medicines for some of the disabled. Unfortunately, the international organizations turned a blind eye to this humanitarian catastrophe. We call on all the related international bodies to fulfill their duty towards the disabled Yemenis and provide aid to this vulnerable group.
In late 2015, the Saudi-led coalition has bombed the Anour Center for Care and Rehabilitation of the Blind in Sana'a, inflicting heavy damages on it. Since the beginning of the Saudi war on Yemen in March 2015, the relentless bombardments of the kingdom have killed tens of thousands of civilians, including women and the children.
Besides losing parts of their bodies, millions of people with disabilities are among those most oppressed groups amid what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. They say the Saudi war and the blockade have turned their lives into a real tragedy. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi arrived in Damascus International Airport. He met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who said Syria looks forward to increasing cooperation with China in various domains, praising what he described as China's ethical policies. Assad thanked China for its stances in support of Syria's sovereignty, unity, and independence. Yi expressed his country's interest in Syria's participation in China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is a global infrastructure development strategy adopted by China to invest in nearly 70 countries and international organizations. He asserted that China will continue supporting the Syrian people in the fight on terror, challenging economic sanctions, and standing against foreign intervention.
The visit comes in the framework of ongoing Chinese support to Syria, as well as boosting cooperation in all sectors, especially now that the government controls most of the country. China played a positive role during the war on Syria in support of the legitimate government and the country's independence and stability.
An hour-long meeting was also held between the Chinese foreign minister and his Syrian counterpart, Faisal al-Miqdad, discussing political and economic topics of mutual interest. They agreed to take bilateral cooperation between their countries to a new level for the benefit of both countries' peoples.
The Chinese foreign minister visits Syria amid economic difficulties Syrians are facing due to the sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. The visit is a message from China to the U.S. and the EU that their siege and pressure on Syrians will be broken by China, which is a strong economic power for sure.
During the Chinese official's visit, Syria and China signed two agreements in the economic and medical assistance sectors. China is one of Syria's staunch allies, which vetoed nearly a dozen UN draft resolutions on foreign intervention in Syria since the war started in 2011. The timing of the Chinese foreign minister's visit to Syria is very important for both the Syrian people and the government in light of the harsh economic situation they are living inside the country. China is conveying a message of support, especially in the economic sector, for Syrians. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Accusations of a state-led anti-Palestine crackdown in British schools have been proven true following the release of a case study by Muslim advocacy group CAGE, which details not only the shocking treatment of students who expressed their humanitarian support for Palestine during Israel's recent onslaught, but also that school leaders have received diktats from the government.
These shock findings highlight the extent in which the government seems to be prepared to go in order to stamp out criticism of Israel at every avenue. Even young students are being targeted by the scheme, which appears bent on hampering freedom of speech on this particular issue.
Out of the 47 cases documented, censorship tactics included verbal warnings, suspensions, a student being expelled, and even police intervention and a referral to an anti-terrorism agency. While most of the students' activities involves little more than vocalizing support for Palestine, fundraising, and displaying Palestine flags. CAGE representatives expressed great concern at the toxic influence government watchdogs have in the British education system.
Schools happily endorse and welcome expressions of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. They join in campaigns against Islamophobia, against any sort of racism that exists in society and prejudices. But when it comes to issues of Palestine, it's as though they are blindsided, and they very much become extensions of the policing arm of the state. Schools and school leaders have a duty to foster an environment within their schools that is conducive to civic education and to create students which are active citizens in the future. What schools should not be doing is disciplining students for practicing basic empathy and showing solidarity with oppressed people around the globe.
For adult activists, speaking up for Palestine could see your reputation assassinated. But now, even young, aspiring humanitarians could see their futures dashed simply for speaking out. Robert Carter, London.
Following an easing of restrictions in the EU and UK, coronavirus cases across Western Europe are on a sharp upward curve. The Delta variant, first identified in India and which spreads much more easily, is being blamed.
The world is becoming a village, so people travel, it's hard to contain.
See all the people here, and some people are not that careful, I think, so...
One word for me, go to vaccine.
The vast majority of young adults and children in the EU have not been vaccinated. This is why the virus is moving around so quickly, experts say.
In view of the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant that is raising concerns not only in Europe but also around the globe, it is extremely important to vaccinate, as per national recommendations, as many people in Europe as possible.
Economists say the EU simply cannot afford further lockdowns. Economic forecasts for the 27-nation bloc are positive, but there are a lot of unknowns.
We continue to monitor the situation very closely, and in particular, and obviously, we are monitoring the Delta variant.
The fact that protectionist Donald Trump is no longer in the White House offers some economic hope, senior EU officials are indicating.
In terms of our relationships with the US, we have gone from a winter of discontents to a summer of cooperation.
In several EU nations, including Greece, France and Ireland, young people have staged protests believing they are being forced by governments to take the jab in order to participate in society. We have been getting some views in Belgium.
I mean, it's good that the protest is there, isn't it?
I feel forced to receive something I don't want to receive, be vaccinated or not. So you can't force people to do that.
Health authorities in the EU argue it is important that young people do get vaccinated, claiming they may only develop a mild illness initially with COVID-19, but could ultimately go on to suffer from long COVID, which can have life-changing implications. Campaigners say EU leaders are shooting themselves in the foot by not providing more vaccines to less well-off parts of the world. This could lead to new variants that might be resistant to existing vaccines, they warn. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
As angry mobs block roads and clash with the army, the price of the dollar against the Lebanese lira was skyrocketing, hinting a gloomy outlook in the horizon. In an interview Thursday night, Hariri blamed President Aoun for impeding the cabinet formation process and for his resignation.
The group led by the president has decided not to cooperate with Saad Hariri, and all the obstacles that I have faced are because of that group. I did not want to just negotiate while knowing that I cannot form a cabinet, so I resigned because it seemed to me that President Aoun does not want to form a cabinet.
Presidential office slammed Hariri for his comments, declaring that Hariri was, quote, not ready to discuss amendments of any kind, and closed the door on any talks. Experts see that Hariri is now launching an internal conflict, using resistance as a scapegoat.
It was obvious that he's preparing for his election campaign, because later in his interview yesterday night, he launched his election campaign by opening fire on the resistance in Lebanon.
Observers see that talk of electoral campaigns will be the main focus in the post-Hariri resignation era.
The Americans, they haven't reached a point to let the solution take place. They are still using the financial crisis as a blackmailing means to try to blackmail the resistance in Lebanon.
The state of despair on the streets of Beirut is a reflection of the general situation.
Everyone knew there would not be a new cabinet. The country has collapsed. If the prime minister wanted to actually form a cabinet, he would go for real negotiations. The result will be death of the people, no electricity, no water, and no fuel. Lebanon has fallen.
All the people need to protest. The rich and the poor are equal now, and all sects are facing the same crisis.
They all want a piece of cheese for themselves. If they cannot rule right, they should leave. People are helpless. Hunger knows no religion or sect.
With the socioeconomic crisis quickly escalating, many believe the end result will be a probable demise of the entire political system.
French sources described Hariri's move as cynical self-destruction for the political class. Others considered it the start of an electoral campaign. But one thing all sides agree on is that it puts Lebanon in the face of a chaotic period ahead. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Israel has advanced a major settler building project known as E1. Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, has relaunched the controversial project for the construction of over 3,412 settler units in the occupied West Bank to connect the largest Israeli settlement of Ma'ale Adumim to the West Jerusalem Al-Quds. The project was first pushed forward by former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Palestinians have slammed the move as seriously dangerous.
Now, as Bennett brings it on the table, it is just to show the settlers that he's better than Netanyahu. He's continued the main strategy and ideology of the settlements in the West Bank. Netanyahu has been freezing or a little bit slowed down the working in the UN, but they are now pushing it forward. This is a very dangerous colonial project in the West Bank. This will be totally cut off and divided the West Bank between the north and the south. So it's very sensitive, very strategic.
Israeli authorities have been seeking to expel tens of thousands of Palestinian Bedouins to other Palestinian towns since long time ago because the area has been allocated to E1 settlement constructions. This area sits on roughly 15 square kilometers of land northeast of Jerusalem Al-Quds. For years, the Israeli regime has tried to dismantle the Bedouin communities to make way for its massive E1 settlement project in East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The planned Israeli building in E1 would effectively cut the West Bank in half and prevent Palestinian sovereign contiguity between northern and southern West Bank.
The project comes in line with Israel's annexation plan. The new regime in Israel is seeking to disrupt any territorial integrity of a future Palestinian state based on the 1967 borders. To this end, it displaces more Palestinians in violation of all international laws.
Palestinians say that it's very clear that Bennett is even worse than Netanyahu, as he started rapidly to carry out his agenda to expand illegal settlements in the occupied territories even more vigorously.
During Netanyahu's term in office, Israeli-only roads were built as first step in constructing settlements in the controversial E1 zone. Now Bennett has revived the plan and the actual construction for E1. Palestinians warned this project would practically cut the occupied West Bank in half. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
South Africa has been in utter chaos since last Thursday, a day after former President Jacob Zuma handed himself into authorities to serve a 15-month jail term. Zuma was convicted of contempt of court after it defied an order to testify before a judicial commission probing allegations of fraud during his years in office. The former leader's imprisonment sparked protests across much of South Africa. The unrest soon escalated into mayhem. In the past 7 days, more than 800 retail shops and over 200 shopping malls have been looted. Government estimates suggest hundreds of millions of dollars of goods have been purloined or destroyed. That has sparked fears of a looming humanitarian crisis, with authorities warning that parts of South Africa may soon be running short of basic provisions. Analysts believe this could be a further blow to the nation's economy already reeling from the coronavirus pandemic.
What could come out of this, of course, would be even further economic crises in South Africa amid this COVID-19 third wave, which has impacted South Africa more than any other country on the African continent.
The South African Army has already deployed thousands of troops to help overstretched police restore order. That proving insufficient, the government has called another 25,000 Army Reserve troops to tackle the emergency. In addition, people in areas worst hit by the violence have taken up arms and formed vigilante groups to protect their neighborhoods. South Africa is experiencing one of its worst crises since the end of apartheid regime in early 1990s. With the former president in prison, high unemployment, and much of the country plagued by crime, it is hard to imagine an easy path back to normalcy.
South Korea has been hit hard by a fourth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, with new daily cases over 1,000 for the past week. More than 50% of the recent new cases have been the more contagious Delta variant. The government has issued a number of restrictions and guidelines, including banning gatherings of more than two people, other than family, after 6 p.m.
Please refrain from going out or holding social gatherings and abide by the disinfection guidelines wherever you are. Even if you don't have symptoms, please protect yourself and your loved ones by getting tested. We can and must overcome this crisis. The government will do its best.
Bae Hyung-won and his wife operate a small seafood restaurant in Incheon, just outside of Seoul. He diligently disinfects his restaurant, adhering to social distancing protocols and other government guidelines. He says a lot of businesses in the neighborhood are just hanging on.
The current situation is affecting us tremendously. Up to now, the first to third waves of the coronavirus weren't so bad. But as soon as the fourth wave started, from the first day, the number of customers plunged by 80 to 90%.
As many countries around the world are now opening up, South Korea is under more pressure from a restive public to respond more effectively to the outbreak. Young people have been especially critical, as they will wait months for their shots amid shortages of vaccine supplies. The South Korean government had set a goal of November to achieve herd immunity. Currently, about 12% of the population has been fully vaccinated, while health officials emphasize the importance of the next 2 months in containing the recent wave of infections. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Humanitarian activists gathered outside the Italian parliament to stage a protest against an anti-migration deal between Rome and Tripoli. The protest, dubbed a blindfold to avoid seeing the truth, was called by a number of NGOs ahead of a crucial parliamentary vote on the renewal of the accord. Protesters were saying the deal has been causing suffering to tens of thousands of refugees since its signing in 2017.
Under the deal, Italy helps Libyan maritime authorities to stop boats at sea and return the illegal migrants to detention centers in Libya. At least 50,000 people, including thousands of children, have been returned to the northern African countries so far. However, the condition in Libya is a matter of concern as they face detention and serious abuse, including rape and torture.
I think it's not a problem, unfortunately, only of the Italian government and the country. It's a European problem, and the European policies, basically, Europe endorses the Italian initiative.
During the protest, activists read messages of desperation sent by the refugees trapped in war-ravaged Libya. Some refugees have unsuccessfully attempted to cross the Mediterranean up to 3-4 times.
Facciamo finta di non vedere cosa succede.
We keep turning a blind eye to what is happening in Libya. The decision to renew the deal is a shameful display of how far EU governments are prepared to go to keep refugees and migrants from Europe's shores.
C'è una parte della politica italiana.
Here in Italy, some politicians deal with the migrants as if they were enemies at the gates, creating fear among Italians. The other politicians make sure not to create too much discomfort to their electorate.
Some lawmakers who attended the protest also said that an Italian Navy ship docked in Tripoli has even directly coordinated the intercepting activities carried out on the refugee boats by the Libyan Coast Guard. Later on Wednesday, Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio told the House that Italy will no more fund the Libyan Coast Guard to encourage a management of migrant flows that is more respectful of international norms by Tripoli. Max Civili, Rome.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you. And you're listening to Youth Station, only on IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Hassanain, and we have in our studio with us, Sister Zainab Barakat.
I didn't even interrupt you this time.
I know, right? I was waiting for you to interrupt
me. I'm so proud of myself. You know why I didn't interrupt you, though?
Yeah?
Because I thought we would talk about some people don't like us.
Uh-huh.
Right? And we have to navigate our lives around them anyway. Please don't hate me more. But that's a real issue. Yeah. That's a real thing.
Okay, wait. Let me clear. Like, okay, so we in the studio, like, we are co-hosts.
Yeah.
So, like, you're comfortable around me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what if you have to work and you get a co-host that you don't like? But you have to work with them.
In general, colleagues that I don't like,
uh-huh.
I wanna... It doesn't happen very often that I hate someone
mm-hmm.
because I'm not a very social person. I'm not exposed to that many people. I have a very close, limited circle of friends.
Right.
And I keep it that way. I don't add more people to it.
Mm-hmm.
If I do come across someone whom I don't like,
mm-hmm.
I'm very bad at hiding it.
Okay,
In the sense that I get salty with them or I throw shade or anything, but I officially don't interact with them because I'm afraid I would do something
offensive. Can you please explain to our listeners briefly, like, what's the difference between you not liking someone and someone not liking you?
Well, there's a huge difference. Someone not liking me is... Okay, to me, when I don't like someone is that person drains my energy,
mm-hmm.
that person bores me,
yeah.
that person annoys me,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is not a very fair thing to do because I get annoyed by everything. It's not a fair thing to say. I'm very irritable, right?
Yeah.
I get sensory overdrive. I get annoyed by loud noises, loud mm-hmm. people. Bright colors, a lot
of
light.
That's why we're sitting in a calm studio.
Exactly. Right? So, is it easy to annoy me? Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Would I show it?
Mm-hmm.
No, not really.
Yeah.
I would just sink into myself.
Maybe, okay, for like, you know, simply saying like, you know, maybe you don't like a trait, you know, particular trait in the person, like, you know, you don't like his traits.
Yeah.
You don't like his characteristics?
Yeah.
And you don't like him?
Yeah.
What about someone not liking you?
That's just the same thing. They don't like my traits. They don't like my personality. They don't like...
Yeah, because it's always not the same, right? It's always not the same, right? You know, sometimes you don't like someone because of the traits. Sometimes people envy. It's because of envy and jealousy.
True. And sometimes you really don't have a reason. You just don't like someone. Have you ever gotten that? You just pick up this vibe, this unfavorable vibe.
I know.
The poor guy, he never did anything wrong to you, but you're just like, eh.
You just simply don't get the good vibes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there has to be a philosophical reason behind this, because the human spirit is so strong.
Right.
It picks up certain things. Let me ask you another question. You asked me, I don't like someone doesn't like me. How does this look like? I want to ask you, if you were another person,
mm-hmm.
would you like you?
Definitely.
Ladies and gentlemen, the self-conceited award goes to... Sirius, you'd like you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. I am so happy for you. That's awesome, man, that you'd like yourself.
So
I don't think I'd like me. I'd be like, why is she so weird?
You're trying to say that there's some problem in you.
Definitely. Oh, yes. Dude, I'm weird, man. But what do you do when you don't like someone? Impossible alternate universe, right? Where you don't like me as your co-host or whatever, as a human being. And I walk into the room. How's your first reaction?
Firstly, I try to keep the things cool.
Right, right. So you wouldn't like roll your eyes. Like, oh, here she comes again. You wouldn't do that.
Yeah. So
that's just rude.
Yeah, first I'll act normal and I try to hide that, the not liking thing.
How do you hide it? Not expressing it or expressing the opposite?
By not expressing
it. Okay, good. Because some people do that. They don't like someone and they try to hide it, so they express the opposite. They overdo it. And I'm like, that's not genuine. That's being a two-faced snake.
Hypocrisy, right? Yeah.
That's hypocrisy. Stop. Yeah. And they think that they are being tolerant of that person that they don't like. No, you're doing the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. You're being a two-faced snake. You're a hypocrite. You're a jerk. You should stop.
Exactly.
Remove yourself.
So I just don't express my feelings. I try to hide
it. I just become quiet. I don't interact with that person.
If I can, I'll just leave the room.
Yeah, if that person is really that annoying, especially if there's like some beef between you guys, you had like this former argument or something, or this misunderstanding.
Yeah.
All right, so if you don't, if I don't like someone, they walk into the room, I'd smile with a greeting and then I would go quiet. I wouldn't interact with them anymore, right? I'd go totally quiet. And if there's like another person in the room whom I am cool with, I would try not to even talk to that person, you know, so that the person whom I hate,
we're just quiet, right?
Like, yeah, I'm just quiet. Don't talk. Yeah, I'm just quiet today, man. I'm just quiet.
Yeah.
And then if I have had beef with them before, that's when things get interesting. Then I'm like smiley and chirpy, and I really get on their nerves. God, please forgive me.
Please stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to your audience, and where we were discussing about, you know, you not liking someone and someone not liking you. If you have to live with that person, what do you do?
Yeah, that's the good question. How do you navigate someone whom you don't like, or someone who doesn't like you, but you're constantly associated with, you're constantly exposed to? Well, if it's a family member, go see therapy. Like, go get counseling. You can't. I mean, if your brother doesn't like you, then there's a problem. Right?
Yeah.
But if your brother-in-law doesn't like you, that is still avoidable. Just try to be amiable, polite, you know, have your interactions be based on Islamic ethics.
What if you try to solve the problem itself?
Why?
There might be a reason that you don't like him or he doesn't like you.
Oh, okay.
So if you remove the problem from the root.
Oh, that works. I mean, if it's in a way... if there's a reason why he doesn't like you, then yeah. But sometimes I thought maybe like it's that bad vibe thing. I don't know why I don't like you. You just give me bad vibes.
You know, sometimes what happens is, you know, sometimes you don't like someone. You know, you can solve the issue, right? Right? You don't like someone because of the particular thing. Like if you go and you talk, like you converse, like you can solve the issue.
Yeah, there's a misunderstanding somewhere.
Yeah, there was some misunderstandings and you could solve the thing. Sometimes what happens is, like, I don't like someone because
they're just annoying.
No, because of this particular trait.
Which annoys you.
And you know why you cannot solve it? In the eyes of that person.
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, exactly. So how, you cannot explain to him, bro, you're doing wrong.
Yeah, like, there are a lot of people whose in presence I feel like I'm prone to sinning. Like, they're good people, but they have a habit of doing ghibe, backbiting. Mm, yeah. And to them, it doesn't feel like backbiting.
Exactly.
And I don't want to be around that person.
Yeah.
Or, like, they're constantly talking about other people. They might not be saying something bad, but you shouldn't be mentioning another human being's name right. in their absence.
Right, right.
Right? And they do that a lot, and I don't appreciate it, and I don't want to be around them.
Right.
So what I do is I try not to be around them.
So, you know, to keep things cool, what you can do is just leave the room, like.
There's actually a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam where His Eminence says, solitude is better than a bad companion. If you had to choose between having a crappy friend mm-hmm. or someone who puts you at the risk of sinning and being right. alone, choose being alone. Because then you're safe at least.
Exactly.
So, another way of navigating around someone who's a part of your life who doesn't particularly like you mm-hmm. is idfa' billati hiya ahsan. It's a verse in the Quran that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, idfa' billati hiya ahsan, fa'idha alladhi baynaka wa baynahu adawatan fa'innahu waliyun hamim. Repel evil, repel whatever with right. that which is better. Mm-hmm. So that if there's animosity between you and someone,
right.
through your good actions, mm-hmm. they would become waliyun hamim, a compassionate friend to you. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. Allah just gave us a psychology lesson.
Right.
He was like, if someone is being salty toward you, mm-hmm. you extend your hand toward them. Mm-hmm. In the Risalatul Huquq of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, the Treatise of Rights, His Eminence says, Ya Allah, bless me with the strength, with the power, mm-hmm. to talk good about those who talk yeah. bad behind my back mm-hmm. and to reach out to those who cut ties with me yeah. and to be nice to those who oppress me. Not like oppression yeah. on like Israel-Palestine scale right. of oppression, yeah. but like, you know, in family feuds, misunderstandings yeah. and that, you know, be the bigger person mm-hmm. and you'll see how that person will change for the better and mm-hmm. become waliyun hamim for you.
That's right. Because there's some people, you can do nothing. There's some people that they always hate you. Like,
oh my God,
they
yes.
always hate you.
What do you do with those people, though? Yeah,
the toxic people. I guess you can just stay away from
them. Just stay away from them. That's the best thing you can
like,
do.
What sort of you do? They just hate you.
And get therapy, because that sort of toxicity mm-hmm. in your life can drain you.
Yeah,
I see that a lot with in-laws. Mother-in-laws especially. Yeah. What's wrong with mother-in-laws? Shout out to mother-in-laws out there, man. Chill. You got a daughter. She's someone else's daughter. How would you feel if someone did this to your daughter?
Right? Yeah.
So I feel like we have this problem a lot mm-hmm. in the case of in-laws.
Right.
Mother-in-laws or their son-in-laws or daughter-in-laws. Not so much with father-in-laws, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. In certain situations, old school parents could be a little bit more melodramatic, old mm-hmm. school moms especially. And how do you navigate with that? You cannot make your mother-in-law like you if she doesn't like you, especially mm-hmm. if you didn't do anything. She just doesn't like you because mm-hmm. that it's that mother-in-law vibe.
Yeah.
But you should definitely get therapy. It's gonna break you some way or another. And just try to be polite.
Yeah, there's some people that still try to, you know, patch up with them, but it doesn't happen, right?
It doesn't work. She just, you give her bad vibes, man. She doesn't like you. But what you can do is remain polite. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go head to head with her and get therapy.
Why, if you think this way, you know, the best of creation, Khairul Bariya, Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, like, they were the best of the creation, right?
Yeah.
They still had enemies.
Yeah, people, exactly. There are still people who
didn't like them.
Well, those people had problems. But the point is, you can't please everyone. You're not a jar of Nutella.
Yeah, right. That's right.
And that's all the time we have for today's episode.
And thank you so much, dear listeners, for staying with us. And with that being said, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am what I am. Because you made, I have what I have. My love is strong. Because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega. I
protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver. My defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
Ultimately, Haiti's many problems will only be solved in Port-au-Prince, not Washington, says Doug Bando, author, in an article published under the heading The Tragedy of Haiti. Washington should keep its troops at home. Stay tuned for more. The U.S. involvement in Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq were disasters, should surprise no one. Social engineering gets harder as differences in history, religion, culture, geography, and politics grow. Yet Washington had ample warning nearer home, having failed to do much better in its own neighborhood, like in Haiti. And a plot apparently involving two Haitian Americans and nearly 30 Colombians, the country's president, Moi, was assassinated. Exactly who wanted him dead and why remains yet unknown. It was a terrible crime. Yet it was a minor blip in the disastrous state of Haitian politics. The assassination added more poison to an already toxic political miasma. Haiti suffers from pervasive corruption, criminal gang activity, violence, and poverty. President Moi faced almost daily demonstrations protesting his politics and practices. Criminal gangs, often used by politicians against their opponents, have killed more than 400 people over the last 3 years. The U.S.-backed president was serving past his term based on dubious legal authority. He was ruling by decree and had cracked down violently on opponents. He was pushing a new constitution that would increase presidential power. UK's US-backed government failed to hold elections for the Chamber of Deputies last year, allowing its members' terms to expire. Only 10 of 30 senators remain in office. Ma illegally forced several Supreme Court justices from office. The High Court's top judge recently died of COVID-19. Foreign Minister Claude Joseph, interim Prime Minister, claims to be acting president and in charge of the security services. So does Ariel Henry, appointed by Ma to be the new Prime Minister but not sworn in before Ma's death. Neither Joseph nor Henry has been approved by Parliament as required. As Joseph and Henry squabbled, the depleted Senate nominated its head as interim president. There are two constitutions, one approved in French and Creole, the other later, one only in French, with conflicting provisions governing presidential vacancies. The country has received $13 billion in foreign aid over the last decade with little impact, other than fueling corruption and horror at the assassination only temporarily brought together a badly divided country. In 1994, the Clinton administration threatened to invade Haiti and depose Cedros and his junta, which then ceded power. Alas, the purported return of democracy yielded more instability and violence. A few years later, the Haitian people elected Aristide, both antagonists of the country's rapacious elites, noted advocate of neck-lacing as president, and he was forced from office by a popular revolt. A United Nations stabilization mission followed. In 2006, new elections were held. Over the last decade, an election was delayed by an earthquake. A president was forced from office over fraud allegations. An interim president was chosen. Another election was delayed, in part due to a hurricane. And U.S.-backed Ma was elected. The latter's chaotic reign, governing abuses, and authoritarian approach were fully in line with Haitian political experience. So was the perception of his critics that Washington was meddling and helping prop him up. Only the assassination was a break from the path. Many Haitian presidents left office unwillingly, but they normally survived the experience. Haiti's efforts have been constantly exacerbated by outsiders. France's attempt to reconquer the island before finally giving up in return for a financial indemnity. The U.S. refused to recognize the former slave colony's government until 1862, when America was engulfed in the civil war and battling another slave state. Conflict with the Spanish colony of Santo Domingo and later country of Dominican Republic persisted for years. The latter remains hostile in recent years, expelling tens of thousands of ethnic Haitians, some economic migrants, and other lifelong residents. America's early intervention did not yield a sustainable democracy, while aid to the Duvaliers strengthened a brutal dictatorship. Since then, U.S. and U.N. occupations had no long-term impact, nor did the serial interventions in Haitian politics by George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton administrations, the first mostly hidden, the second open against and for Aristide. Washington's more recent efforts in the West Asia region and Central Asia provide no evidence that it is any better prepared today to affect the internal transformation that Haiti desperately needs. U.S. U.S. military intervention would be a very bad idea. The U.S. remains more than a little busy in the world. Once in place, American forces could not easily leave. New tasks for them would be constantly proposed. There would be an election to run, a new government to protect, a political system to stabilize, an economy to develop, and ever more tasks of the sort proposed by Berg to complete. Hoping for the most, Haiti's ambassador to the U.S., Bocquet Edmond, argued, "A stable Haiti is in the interest of the United States. That may be an axiom of sorts, given Haiti's proximity to America. However, that interest is limited. In traditional security and economic terms, Haiti is neither vital nor even important. Almost 30 years ago, Senator Joe Biden was asked about Haiti, which the Clinton administration had just occupied to restore democracy. He admitted that it was an awful thing to say, but if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot in terms of our interests." He's right. That was awful thing to say, but it also was true. Instead of military intervention, Washington should focus on the threat of social collapse. Humanitarian aid would help, though it remains best delivered privately, especially by NGOs and expatriates, and delivered outside of the Haitian government's control. The U.S. also should honor its immigrant heritage by offering sanctuary to those in danger or distress instead of military intervention. As for larger political tasks, Washington should back efforts by the United Nations and Organization of American States. France also should lead in light of its historical interest in Haiti. A multilateral investigation into Ma's murder might be helpful. More critical would be delivering enough stability to allow Haitians to restore a functioning government. Only then would they have an opportunity to transcend their nation's latest political catastrophe. Haiti has been a tragedy for centuries because of interventions. The assassination of its president adds to the enormous accumulated misery of its people. They deserve so much better. International support could prove useful, but the past is filled with failures. Ultimately, Haiti's many problems will only be solved in Port-au-Prince, not Washington and any other European country.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, compassion and forgiveness. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Chapter Al-A'raf of Quran, verse number 199 says, practice forgiveness. It expresses the concept of forgiveness and compassion, which is one of the basic principles of the religion of Islam. When we look at the Islamic history, we can see clearly how Muslims established this important precept of the moral teaching of the Quran in their social life. At every point in their advance, Muslims destroyed unlawful practices and created a free and compassionate environment. In the area of religion, language, and culture, they made it possible for people totally opposite to each other to live under the same roof in freedom and peace, thereby giving those subject to them the advantages of knowledge, wealth, and position. Brothers and sisters, this concept of coexistence and tolerance, it is so essential and important for a believer that when we see the plight of today's world, we sometimes feel that it's gotten to a hopeless point. You know, the white supremacy and then discrimination based on nationality, discrimination based on color, discrimination based on race, all of those problems, right? This is the gift of the modern era that we are facing today. If you look at Muslims, alhamdulillah, throughout the history, we have a bright and luminous history. Look at Palestine, for example, as a case study. The Christians, the Jewish, the Muslims, they all lived there when Muslims were controlling this region and this area. But as soon as the Zionist entity of Israel comes into the picture, look what Palestinians have been going through for over 70 years now. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about compassion and forgiveness. And all, you know, the things that we talked about before the break, this showed that the moral teaching offered to humanity by Islam is one that will bring peace, happiness, and justice to the world. The horror that is happening in the world today in the name of Islam is far away from the moral teachings of Quran. It is the work of ignorant, bigoted people, criminals who have nothing to do with religion. Because when we talk about what we discussed before the break, some people come around and say, what about ISIS, right? What about Boko Haram and such organizations and notorious outfits? They're operating in the name of Islam, right? Well, you all have to understand and realize this, dear and respected listeners. The Western imperialist agenda is being executed at the hands of Zionists and Takfiris. This is what we are facing. These organizations, these outfits, so to speak, like ISIS, you know, Daesh and Boko Haram and so on and so forth, you can see it clearly that they are not following Islam. They never have followed Islam. And they're not working for Islam. They don't work under any Islamic leadership, right? When you look at the heinous crimes that they create and the funding and the support that they get from the Western governments, the plot is very obvious for those who want to see. You look at the Zionists, you know, who's funding the Zionists. You look at the Takfiris and these ISIS terrorists, who's funding them, who's supporting them, who's providing them with political immunity. So do you think the West would provide them immunity and provide them with resources because they want to strengthen Islam? That's like a joke. These are the failed projects of the Western imperialist ideology and agenda. So remember that point, and hopefully that clears up your confusion. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.